All right. Well, this is actually one of those who went here is not here this morning. Brenda Freed went with us as well. So there were four of us that went from LCF. And I have to say this interesting thing, when we got down there, we were sitting around as a whole group, and everybody was saying, well, how did you end up on this trip? And pretty much every person pointed back to this man over here. It's like, well, Levi talked to me about it, and he sent me an email. And so Levi was very good at pulling all these people together for this trip. This is where we went. It's kind of zoomed in a bit. If you know where Nicaragua is in Central America, this is kind of a part of Nicaragua. There's a huge lake, Lake Nicaragua. It's about 100 miles long. And if you see, I can use this pointer, we flew into Managua up here, I think Saturday evening, and then the next day, there were two parts of our group. One flew in a military helicopter. We flew in a small plane and flew across the lake and landed down here in San Carlos. So it was a really cool flight. Here in the middle, there's some volcanoes we flew past, which was really neat to see. But that's basically where we went. We spent most of our time down here. And then we also took a little weekend trip out to these islands out here, which was a lot of fun. I'll let let the rest of them talk about some of these other slides here, if I can get it to work. There we go. Larissa, you want to take a shot?
Okay. Well, you can see where the hotel is that we stayed. Most of us stayed in that hotel, but there was another one closer to where we ate our meals that wasn't so nice. And the people there, their showers were a big bucket of water with a little pan they had to scoop up and dump on themselves. But we didn't get that experience, fortunately. Where we ate our meals, you can see there, it's right beside the big yellow Catholic church. And those people were really nice. It was actually a lady's home, and they made it into a little restaurant for us to come and eat there. We ate rice and beans pretty much every day, every meal. Dad grew tired of it. I still like it.
We also, just to know, we walked the whole time here. So this is where we worked in the clinic. And so every day we would walk from basically our hotel down in here, up here to, for breakfast at 7 o'clock. And we'd come down here to the clinic, and we would have devotions down in this building and then start at 8 o'clock here at the clinic. And we were there till at least 5 o'clock, sometimes 6 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday. So we did a lot of walking. I lost 5 pounds. Well, that was partly because of the food, too, I think, but a lot of it was from the walking. So, all right, Levi, you're on. You haven't seen these pictures, have you?
No, I haven't seen these pictures. I have seen the scenes, though. This would have been the clinic at the Red Cross building. And the people, usually there were probably, 100 people or so lined up waiting for us when we got there, ready to get in. And some of those people told me that they waited from 7 o'clock and they were on their feet at 2 or something in the afternoon yet, and some of them even longer for eye care. And
I'll let you keep going, Levi.
What's that?
I'll let you keep going here.
Well, I might not stop you. Well, here's Brenda with a couple of Nicaraguan children. And these children are very, in a way, sociable or whatever you want to call it. My problem is I don't know what the other slides are, so I'm not sure what I should.
There we go. Hey, there's a good slide. Levi's working.
Well, my job was to, one of my jobs, well, this is about all I did besides sitting around sometimes, was to point to the letters, for the people to do that. And I used my finger so much that you can see it's turned kind of crooked. Well, not really. But it's surprising how many people that we had coming to the clinic who were not able to see the see the big E up on the top. See, this was in an area of I don't know how many thousand of people, and had no eye care whatsoever. You know, that's something I don't think most of us can imagine, not being able to go to an eye doctor if we have an injury or, you know, can't see, or we have cataracts or nearsighted or farsighted or whatever. But this is an area where people just didn't have that opportunity. They didn't have very many choices.
This is what Levi did towards the end of the day. Got a little more comfortable position. And they were long days, standing all day long in the hot weather. It was tiring. I was very proud of this man, 78 years old. Is that right?
78.
He worked hard. He kept up with all the young people. He did have his nap in the afternoon, but I think that's allowed. So,
between us two, you compass the general age. He was the oldest, and I was the youngest. Right. The reason they have the E's is because most of the population, a lot of them can't read. So yeah. I think only about 16% go to school, but don't hold me to that figure.
Another thing I should say about those eye things, they were supposed to point which way the M or the E or the 3 or whatever, and getting some of those people to point was very difficult. And it was complicated because some of these, as she said, couldn't read. Well, they didn't know the alphabet, nor did they know their numbers. And so, you know, you'd tell them to go this way or that way or this way or this way, and they didn't. Well, what does that mean, you know, kind of thing. But we survived, and I think we got most of them fairly accurate.
Let us see, you want to talk about what you're doing?
I'm just interested. Has anyone heard of an autorefraction? Does anyone know the term, what that means?
This was my job last year, and she took my job away from me.
I didn't know either, and I still don't really know what it is. But I basically used that machine to look at people's eyes. I think it measured them somehow. The doctors knew how to read the sheets I gave them, so I assumed that I did it right, for the most part. But basically, I would look through it, and I would see a little circle of dots, and then I would have to line up this box with a little tiny, like, the center of their eye. And if I kept that centered, then it would take measurements, and it would tell me when it was done, basically. They would see a little pretty picture with a tree.
This is where I spent pretty much all my time. They had a laptop. This is our inventory of glasses. We have about 4,000, over 4,000 prescription glasses, all cataloged in these boxes. And so what we do is key in the prescription that they have into the computer, and it would come up with the best match of glasses that we had. I mean, like here, you would get your glasses made exactly to that prescription, but we didn't have that choice here. We had to pick the closest glasses that would match their prescription. And sometimes it's pretty frustrating because you couldn't find anything real close, or the ones you pulled out were these big ugly glasses for a cute little guy, you know, and you're like, that's not going to work. So, but that's where I spent all my time pretty much every day back here finding glasses, and we dispensed about over 1,000 glasses in the 9 days we were there. So we were busy. We had one optician, and she was fitting glasses, and she was constantly, we were lined up most of the time, backed up with people. So, all right. You want to talk about surgeries, Levi? Since your son was part of that?
Let's see, was this...
this is Vivian here.
Vivian doing the surgery,
yeah.
Here. They did some 160 surgeries in the 2 weeks we were there. And you can't really see the eye or the patient is down the, you can see the patient there, but you can't really see the eye. But the way the surgeries went. Rob, you saw two of them, didn't you? I only saw one.
I got to see two of them. It was very intriguing to watch them cutting on somebody's eye while they're awake with the cataract surgery. I think the thing that probably bugged me the most, they take this big long needle before surgery. They call it to block the eye, and they stick it back on the side of the eye, and it just looks like it's going into the center of their brain. They stick it down in there. It just kind of reminded me of a dentist, you know, when they come at you with that needle. But it goes in your eye instead. And basically it blocks the optic nerve so they can't feel anything, they can't see anything. But they're awake during surgery because they'll tell them. And actually some of them I noticed it wasn't quite blocked well enough because they started kind of moving around on the table and they had to put some more stuff in there. So, and here's some of the people that, one of the fun things was post-op, the next morning after surgery, you have people there who have not seen for years. And they take that patch off, and they can see for the first time in how many years, you know, and they're very excited. So it was a fun place to be in post-op to see these people be able to see for the first time in a long time. You want to talk about some? I just have some miscellaneous shots here.
These are the kids on our street that our hotel was on, and they would always say hello every time we walked by. We had to teach them how to say goodbye to vary their vocabulary a little bit. But they always wanted a picture every time we walked by, too. So they're always like, photo, photo, when we walked by. And we'd stop and take a photo, and then they'd want to see it. So, the bottom is a picture of one of our meals. The rice and beans is the top left. And then I was surprised we actually had macaroni and cheese.
That was the second week. I think they felt sorry for us.
And the other pictures is some of like the daily life. You can see the women washing their clothes and the lake and the men coming in with the fish. It was a nice, pleasant smell in the morning. And the parrot was on the island in Silentanami. It was really pretty. They had lots of wildlife.
There we go. Anyone want to talk about the orphanage?
I didn't go to the
orphanage. Oh, you didn't go to the orphanage?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
Not this time, anyway.
There's an orphanage that is run by a church in northern Ohio.
It's in Managua.
It's in Managua, and when we came back to Managua, we had the opportunity to go there. It was a wonderful experience. It's kind of a sad experience, too, in some ways. Some of these children they found in dumpsters in various places on the street, and they brought them to this orphanage. It didn't take long for the kids to warm up to you, a few minutes, and we were tearing around there playing ball, and they're hanging all over you. They just need somebody to love them. And I could have spent a long time there, but we didn't have a lot of time to spend. But it was fun to be there, and great to see that kind of ministry happening. This thing doesn't want to move on me. There we go. Of course, you probably know one of the doctors was Kenlin, which would be one of Levi's sons. He was the one that really headed up the trip from a doctor standpoint, and he did a lot of the surgeries. Of course, Brenda was along, and Brenda's sister-in-law, Mim, you see down at the bottom there, Marcus's sister, came along. And my brother was down there as well on a separate team, a work team. They were working on a church building. And my nephew, Jesse. So it was fun to be able to work with them some. We didn't work with them, but we saw them pretty much every day for breakfast and supper in the evening. And I think that's it, isn't it? Yeah. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what we did. And I'm sure Levi will be recruiting people for next year. So if you think this is something you would be interested, I'd encourage it. It's a great experience. And it just opens your eyes to what the rest other parts of the world are like and the needs that are out there. And listen to Levi if he comes prompting you, especially those of you who speak Spanish. You're very valuable down there, because some of us who didn't were felt kind of handicapped in being able to communicate. I did learn how to tell them to sit down. That's about the majority of what I learned, you know, sit down, because that's what the main thing I need to tell them to do. So thank you. Thank you, too, for supporting us with your prayers, and some of you gave some financial support, which is very appreciated. Thank you.
Can I say a few words?
Yes, Levi, go for it.
I was asking Larissa whether she was doing any communicating with some of the friendships she developed down in Nicaragua, and, you know, she pleaded the fifth. She wouldn't answer. But it was kind of interesting to see, you know, so we had some nice Nicaragua boys around, and I'm not quite sure who is chasing who, but anyway. The other thing that I would, you know, it's difficult to communicate what a person really has experienced in these trips. But just to see the kind of poverty and what these people live with is, you know, an experience that all of us North Americans should have at some point in time. They have very little. They're very content with what they have, or they seem to be very happy. And I was wondering, you know, how many of you young kids here would take half of somebody's meal that the guy had eaten and take it gladly and eat it? I don't think any of you would. But down there, you know, a number of us did this. We ate maybe just half of our noon meal, and then we gave it to some little kid, and they just cleaned it up. You know, they're hungry. And you know, we don't know what that is all about, but it's an experience that, you know, keeps reminding me that, you know, we have so much and they have so little, and they're, I think, much more content than I see our people being content. You know, we want everything. And so that's my message here.
Thanks for that little mini sermon, Levi. We needed that.
I think I took pretty good care of these two while they were there.
You think that's how it worked?
They behaved fairly well.
All right, thanks for your attention. The kids and Sunday school teachers can be dismissed at this time.